Welcome to Inside Analog Photo. I'm your host, Scott Shepard, and the Inside Analog Photography radio program is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful. You know, the Instax cameras are in the country, and guess what? The Mini's coming too. Check them out, www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab, the place to send your files, over at richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5 for the most fabulous black and white chrome you've ever seen. Beautiful stuff, dr5.com. Our friends over at Iger Studios, if you want a real high resolution scan done on an Aztec Premier, optimal grain structure, just beautiful high end work, check them out over at igerstudios.com. Upstrap at www.upstrap-pro.com. And of course, our friends at the Analog Photography User Group, the place on the web for all things analog photography, film, emulsion coating, dry plate, wet plate, you name it, everything going on in analog photography is discussed with the experts over at www.apug.org. We got a great show today. We're going to have with us Daniel Bayer. Daniel is the man over at the Kodachrome Project, and I'm sure all of you have heard that Kodak announced this week the discontinuance, the retirement of Kodachrome. So we're going to talk to Daniel today about his project, the Kodachrome Project, his thoughts on Kodak, what's going on with slide film. We were both at Rochester last week discussing this with high-level meetings with Kodak, and we're just going to chat about what's going on with Kodachrome, the current state of affairs with that, his project, and all the stuff going on. Daniel, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Scott. Thanks. How are you?
Great. Thanks for joining us here on Inside Analog Photo, and I really appreciate you joining us. You're a professional photographer, and today I want to talk with you, Daniel, about your very cool Kodachrome project. Kodak made some big announcements this week in regards to something that's very, very dear to millions of people, and especially yourself. So as what I want to start off here with, Daniel, is let's put the context of what's going on. Earlier this week, Kodak announced the retirement of Kodachrome. Done. So let's talk about that in its context itself. Let's also chat about that we were in Rochester last week, confluence of Kodak, and your thoughts on our trip there, what we saw in their film manufacturing plant, and your thoughts on Kodak moving forward. And I want to get into the Kodachrome project and, of course, yourself. So yesterday, the announcement, they retire Kodachrome. What's your thoughts on this?
My thoughts are that, like the song, the writing was on the wall for a while. You had to sprinkle a little bad economy in there, and even if they had second thoughts about doing that, it just made it easier for them to kind of go forward with it and make the announcement. And as far as I feel about it, yeah, I'm a little sad, but I don't think I'm going to fully grieve the whole process until I'm done with my project 18 months down the road, because I've always been kind of moving along with the thought that this day would come. So that's kind of how I feel. Actually, I feel really bad for some of the people who are really brooding over this, who either didn't buy enough of the film or didn't try the film or something like that. But there's some pretty distressed folks out there, and I can feel their pain.
It's what's interesting is, you know, we had this conversation last week that, oh, it'll be in the store, it'll be fine. And if you go online now and check, everybody's out of it.
Yeah, B&H sold, I think, close to 900 rolls today in like 6 or 8 hours, so they blasted right through it. Yeah, it's going to go quick, and we'll see how this whole parlaying of the film out in spurts versus one big bang, how that plays out. Because I don't know about that early fall prediction. I think unless they've got a ton of film to dispense of, I think it's going to go quicker than that.
Let's talk about the Kodachrome project and how this ties in with what we were privy to last week at Kodak. Tell everybody about the Kodachrome project and what you guys are actually doing.
Okay, well, what the Kodachrome project embodies is the idea that kind of seize the day, whether you're a photographer, an artist, or whatever, when you've got a medium or anything that's going to pass and not be around anymore, it's kind of like take a step back, make time, make it maybe not the top priority in your life, but make it a larger priority. So I created this with the intent that things come and go every day, but with this particular era, I think the conclusion of it should be bold, and I think the imagery that comes of it should make a statement about how people do care about things, and that things don't just go bye-bye and people forget about it and go, oh, well, imagine that. So me personally, I want to make some of the best photography I've ever made in my life on this stuff, and I want to do it in the next 18 months, so I'm going to be pushing myself in many ways. Really just trying to drum up some of the better storytelling images that I've come across. So the Kodachrome project is fun in that way. It's got some unique attributes about it that allow people to just latch on to part of history. For example, we've got a couple of really young people on the site. One guy in particular, he was 13 when he started shooting this stuff last year. And incidentally, that's the same age I started using Kodachrome. And immediately, the kid was fired up. He just loves it. And he's since gone through what he estimates is 1,000 frames of Kodachrome since starting to shoot it last year. For a kid, that's pretty cool. He's going to have something incredible to show his grandchildren when he's much older. And he's going to be able to hold it up to a light bulb or the sky or whatever with a magnifying glass and show this beautiful Kodachrome picture to them. Whereas we got all this digital stuff floating in and out of our computers every day, and man, I lose stuff now and then. You know how it is with digital. It's just there's a tactility that's lost there. So these beautiful little 2x2 Kodachrome slides are going to live a long time, and I think it's kind of one of those shoot first, ask questions later scenarios where if you just do it right now, go out and get your film, pick a subject. If you're a photojournalist, pick an essay that you've wanted to kind of push yourself out of the comfort zone and try. And that way, when it's done, you don't have regret, because I see a lot of regret in this world. All that does is destroy your being, and it just reduces your outlook on life to other than hope. So Kodachrome Project, it's going to be a great many things to a great many people. But the number one thing I hope it does is inspire people to change direction, stop, take a look around, and give it a try.
So with yourself shooting now for probably, what, close to 30 years, 32 years, and Kodachrome being one of the initial emulsions that you shot, you still shooting, and you can also get Ektachrome and other fine quality chrome materials from a lot of different people. What's your thoughts on the current state of Kodak Chrome versus Ektachrome? And then, of course, it's very rare now to be able to print an optical print from a piece of chrome. Unless you have a special lab do it, people aren't doing Cibachromes anymore. It's extremely difficult. So really, it's brought into a digital environment. So what does this really mean? Can I shoot Ektachrome and just modify it in Photoshop and say, boom, there, it looks like Kodachrome?
Well, that last part of your question, that's the $64 question right there. The computer's a great equalizer, whether it's music or photography or whatever creative expressive media you're using. Once it goes into the computer, it's subject to the watermark of a computer, meaning Photoshop. You can take your image in there and clone out grandma and put in power lines or take them out. Music, you mimic the attributes of a grand piano. So that's all well and fine, and there's a lot of great creative freedom with that. But at the same time, it just kind of loses some of the hands-on approach to some of the things I enjoy in life, like woodworking. If you go buy a fine piece of handcrafted furniture, you want to know that the guy who made it, he might have a few splinters under his fingernails, and he's got some kind of just rough skin, and he's very proud of that. But you buy a desk for your office, and it's covered in laminated particle board. Well, there's far less emotional connection to that person who created it and the person buying it, right? So it's just one of those things where I think that's what's causing the problem with the hybrid workflow in photography. I think we have more film options and more digital options. We do options to make great representations of our films with digital devices. So there's kind of that area there that needs to be improved upon with some less expensive and yet still quality producing optical scanning devices. Yeah, labs. There's one Cibachrome lab I know of that I really trust out in L.A., the Lab Ciba. And he's just a master printer. He's one of the last guys that'll do an optical print from a transparency. And those aren't inherently easy, by the way, especially with Kodachrome because of the block up of the shadow detail. And if you're one of those guys who just think, okay, the print is all that matters, period, then you are going to be so much better off scanning that transparency and being able to optimize all the values that you see in the transparency on the computer screen for printing output. So if you've got a guy who's just totally bent on, no, I'm not going to ever touch a computer, well, they're locked in that, but let's hope that their photography represents that idea well then, because really, you use the tools you need to get the result you want. And I think, like a lot of us, we love using our film cameras because they just get the heck out of the way of taking pictures. They don't boggle us down with firmware updates and error messages. They just do what they're supposed to. And because of that, we use film, among other attributes of film. So people aren't going to give that up. And I don't think they should have to either. I think choices are great, and I think we should be able to continue to have those choices. But there's definitely areas that are lacking as far as product development and support when it comes to getting a print or representing that slide or transparency in a way that's other than looking at it projected on a wall or in your hand.
Maybe you can explain to people that haven't or haven't shot Chrome in quite a while your personal thoughts on the difference between Kodachrome and the current state of Ektachrome that's available from Kodak. And of course, I'm sure Fuji makes a bunch of different chromes too. So what's your thoughts between Kodachrome that is not dead yet, but like you said, the writing's on the wall. I guess you could consider it has some kind of fatal disease and we know when it's going to die. So consequently, right. You want to hang out with your best friend before something happens. What's your thoughts right. on the difference between Kodachrome and the current version of Ektachrome and other chromes that are available from, say, Fuji and other people?
Well, I would split the answer into two different parts. The first part would be, ask me this 15 years ago, and the answer would be, I don't like how hypersaturated they are, meaning Velvia 50. The skin tones you would get from some of these other E6 films were pretty garish and not very flattering. They worked great for flat lighting and landscapes. Some of the pictorial work that would be contemplative, where you would have a lot of control over the lighting and the contrast in the light you give to the scene, they're fantastic for. And I'll admit, I use a lot of Velvia. But now, it's changed. I think both Kodak and Fuji have realized that not everybody needs hypersaturated, someone fell asleep on the hue saturation slider type of looking shots. And I think they're coming out with some really good products. The one thing I'm going to say that's still different, though, is there's a texture to the grain of Kodachrome that has more acuteness to it. So when you introduce a film like Velvia and you put the slide next to it, which I've done, it really does look velvety. So it's rendering the fine details, but that acuteness is not coming through like Tri-X. Tri-X, as a black and white film, arrests you every time with sharp grain. It's so sharper grain that you don't object that it's grainy. You don't care because it's sharp. Kodachrome is the same way. It's a very sharp film, even if it is more grainy. But a lot of photographers have come to accept grain as being part of film, part of life. And I think the way they compare now, I haven't used a lot of the neutral films. I've used Astia, and I've used Kodak's less saturated varietal as far as E6 goes. They're good enough now to where, unless you are a complete Kodachrome fanatic, they're probably the better choice. Unless you're attached to the process of judging the light differently than other slide films, you can accept the scanning differences in the films. I think most of the films out there now, that's probably the big reason why Kodak's Kodachrome products started to slide in use, is that the E6 films started to come up on par, at least in image quality in the here and now, to Kodachrome. Even though the unique look might not have been there, for most people, they're getting from it what they want. The other question, I guess, would be archival durability of the medium. Kodachrome has well proven itself to last at least the span of a human life, because it's already lasted that long, almost 74 years. So what else do we need to say? That's one of those archival mediums out there. As far as these other new E6 films, you would hope that what they've pushed for in archival stability that we're going to see in 30 to 40 years' time, we've still got a couple decades to go here yet, a generation at least, before we start to see these Velvia slides that were shot in the 90s to see how they're going to hold up.
Definitely. I think, like you said, it's more of a personal connection with Kodachrome, more of an emotional thing, more so than technology, because Kodak, once they put out this press release, they put up their information on a blog, and they have Steve McCurry saying, okay, well, I shot the stuff on Kodachrome, but the last shoot that I did a backup on, I used Ektachrome, and the stuff worked great. So I think they're putting out information-wise that people can shoot Ektachrome and still feel happy about shooting chrome, great color and saturation, and they don't need to use this archival old process of K14 and using Kodachrome.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you and I can go and do E6, the transparency process, very consistently in our home. All we got to do is get it dialed in, get the temperature baths correct all the time, or if it's a Jobo, and it'll be just as easy as any other photographic process. But K14, forget it. It's completely out there. It's called K14 for a reason. There's 14 distinct steps in the process to get to that final image. The more steps you have, the more things you have that could go wrong.
Let's talk about our trip to Eastman Kodak. Last week, you, a few other people, myself, we went to Eastman Kodak. They showed us their film manufacturing facility, and we had some meetings with high-level executives. Of course, they wanted to let us know about this Kodachrome thing. We were under NDA, so we knew about it first. And I think they wanted us to help them deal with our readers and listeners of what we're doing. But what's your thoughts on Kodak and bringing us to Rochester and what they're trying to convey through us?
I think there were fairly genuine intentions there as far as the person slash corporate figure is concerned. They're all people, and we all got to speak pretty candidly about a lot of topics. But at the same time, they are a corporation, and they're always going to look at everything they do as a cost-benefit ratio, including bringing us out there. So I think one of the things they probably wanted to do is to not only set up a little damage control for people taking shots at Kodak for discontinuing Kodachrome, but in film in general. I think it was expressed to us, let's not let people start thinking that Kodak is not committed to producing and distributing great film products, because they are. And I got the feeling that was pretty genuine. I don't know if it was so much damage control, people were going to bash them for Kodachrome, as it was people were going to bash them for the other film products that are still in the lineups, like Tri-X and T-Max. Because you know how it works. You get an announcement, you think, okay, what's next? Here comes the avalanche of the discontinuation notices. And one unique attribute of the way they chose to word this was they chose retirement instead of discontinuing as the term to announce this to everybody. So I think in some ways they recognize, too, that Kodachrome in the era is even bigger than Kodak thought it would ever be. So they gave it its due, and they were respectful of that. And why say they're discontinuing it when they could just really say, we're retiring it. It's 75 years old now, or 74 years old. It's time to retire. And they also mentioned that they were celebrating it, which they're doing. They've got wonderful images up on the site and all that. But as far as the meeting goes, it's one of those things where everybody's always going to be skeptical in that situation. Why are you bringing us here? What's in this for you guys? Why are you really doing it? And I would like to believe that they chose us because we represent a different voice in photography. We're kind of have feet on both sides of the fence. We're not Steve McCurry to where we're just dealing with nothing but magnum-level photographers and publishing agencies. We know these people, too, but we also talk to the hobbyist who's passionate or whatever. And it's just because we love photography. We choose to be a voice in photography because we feel like it needs a voice besides the other ones that are speaking. So I would hope that that's what they were bringing us into the fold for. That was certainly the impression I got. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on that as well.
No, I think so. And like you said, I mean, the people that we know at Kodak are personal friends of ours. So consequently, if you take away personal friendship and look at it from an actual media to corporation standpoint, I think what they did was great. They wanted to show off that Kodak is completely in the game for making film. They showed us their billion-dollar facility they use to coat all this robotic high-end stuff. It is very high technology making film. People don't think that it's such a big deal, but it's extremely high-end. They're committed to this, and they showed this off to us. So I do find it very interesting that we had some meetings with Mary Jane Killier, that's the president of Kodak, and the day before we meet with her, she announces her retirement that I thought was quite interesting. Yeah, we didn't know about at the time. But nevertheless, I do think that the project that you're working on, the people that we reach, the people that Steven Schaub reaches, the guys over at photo.net, is a good place for Kodak to get their message out and to let people know that they're committed to E6 film, black and white, color neg, and all these other things going on. So I think that it was the right kind of move for Kodak to do PR-wise to be able to get their message out without looking like it was the message from the man.
Right. They wanted the voice of reason. And like one of the people that we were dealing with told me personally, we could badmouth them or we could put them under the fire there for all they knew, but it's just what it is. So, yeah, if any one of us would have had really just poor opinions of what went on in their product line and all that, then that would have come out and that would have been what it was. But I think that the four of us tended to be pretty evenly balanced as far as the whole digital versus analog game and all of that. And this is how, like, we spoke on the notion that let's stop comparing numbers and test targets and resolution charts. And when we compare mediums, let's compare it on the level of how do you, as an artist, connect with that medium emotionally? In other words, is it just plain fun for you to drag the old FE2 out of the closet, stick a roll of film in it, and just take a roll of film out and just go shoot it? You may have a different connection to that than you do with your Nikon D700 or something. And so that's why I'm glad we really expressed to them that we can kind of all collectively kind of start to put that crazy fire out where it just escalates into absolutely nothing useful. Then I think photography will start to retain a good name and get a little bit more of its good name back, because I honestly think that those technology wars that have come about in the last decade with photography kind of put some newcomers off. I know it's made them feel like they don't know what the heck they're looking at. I get emails on a regular basis. Like, man, I'm so overwhelmed. What camera do I want? And I can't blame them. You go on these forums like DP Review or some of these other places, and it's just the resolution wars are enough to give you a migraine.
Yeah, it is positive that we can get a message out to people to say that, yes, it is okay to shoot film. It is cool. There is some backing behind this. And like you said, people have been very negative about analog capture, and I don't understand why. It serves no purpose.
Exactly. Well, yeah, it makes you want to look at it like, okay, what's your work look like? Because I want to see what's working for you. And it's almost like if you're going to moan about that guitar, well, then pick that one up and play a song, huh? Because we want to see what this is all about. Because I hear it all the time, and it just gets a little old. But thankfully, I still have the energy to interject when I know I can keep it short and say something that may be, pretty introspective as far as we as photographers go. And I think it's fantastic that Kodak has made a public statement through us and through other means that they are committed to film and film users. And I really look forward to what they come up with. Here's an interesting one for you and your listeners. Okay, so we've got Kodachrome right now, and it's just about to exit, and we know of its attributes, its qualities. It would speak to me that Kodak would already be thinking ahead about what they're going to replace it with, meaning that if they can't replace Kodachrome per se, maybe they can come out with a film that is very reminiscent of that look, and that would appeal to Kodachrome users, because in my case, if they did that, I would use it. If I got a new Ektachrome film that looked fantastically like Kodachrome, why wouldn't I not use that? I think that's what a lot of people are waiting to see what happens with Kodak. Okay, they've discontinued Tecpan, they've discontinued infrared, they've now discontinued Kodachrome. What are they going to come out with next? They've got Ektar out there, fantastic print film. If I had that as a kid, I don't know if I would have used Kodachrome, to be honest with you, without happening upon it through the normal channels. Great film. So far, so good. They're on the right track. Let's see what they come up with next. Let's be excited about it and be supportive. And if they drop the ball and we don't see anything for 3 years that knocks our socks off, then we've got a right to kind of come knocking back on the door and say, okay, guys, start walking the talk.
Yeah, and I think that, like we said, they're committed to film. And I think people that are shooting analog or even analog into a digital environment don't have anything to worry about. And I think that, yes, it's definitely a misfortune that Kodachrome is going away. But like we said, we have 18 months. Dwayne's is going to keep processing till the end of 2010. So I guess it's just a matter of if you can get your hands on more film.
Exactly. And I think really it's just a case of that. You've been created with a timeline now as the Kodachrome fan out there. And this is what I keep stressing to people. And what I've stressed to them even before this announcement is that there's going to be a time when you've got a time limit put on you as far as what you can do with the film. So let that be the fire under your tush that gets you going towards that idea that you're just kind of rolling around in your head. Make it happen. Get out there and do it. And honestly, in reading my own forum and just seeing what people are doing as far as reacting to availability of Kodachrome and seeing what's actually going on, I might try to get a hold of a couple hundred rolls and just stash them away for other people and not make a profit on them. But 6 months down the road, when some poor guy's like, man, I've got this great story idea and it's perfect for Kodachrome, but I can't get a hold of this stuff, and then I'd love to parlay that out to people who really, really are passionate, really want to do something with it. And if I can do that, I think I'm going to try to make it happen. And that's actually something I just thought of in the last couple hours here today. So I'm going to try to create a separate little stash for people who don't want to buy it, flip it on eBay, but they really want to use it, because that's what the film should be used for.
Well, exactly. And I think hopefully Kodak has more inventory to sustain some more sales. Like you said, everything now in the channel's gone. Does that mean that Kodak's out? Supposedly a master roll of film on a production run is about 30,000 rolls. Now, based off of Dwayne's that have been doing supposedly 800 to 1,000 rolls a day, that's only a month worth of process, and that's not very much. But in the sales of this type of emulsion, 30,000 rolls could be more than a year's worth.
Right. And the other question would be, did they just coat that master roll the day before we got there to Rochester? Are they going to coat it, or did they coat it 2 years ago? And the sales are so dang slow that they've been nibbling away at this master roll, and there's only 10,000 rolls left for everybody. That's another question. So there's other things at work here, too. Unlike other films, like I've got Tecpan in my freezer that I'm going to use hopefully 10 years from now, because I can. I've got the processing for it, and it's easy to do. Kodachrome, not so much. So I think the people who buy Kodachrome with the intent of making a profit off of it, they've got to be careful, because the processing is going to run out, and then they're going to be stuck with artifacts that they can wallpaper their bathroom with the cardboard boxes for all I care. So it's going to be an interesting thing to watch, the whole eBay versus distributorship of this last batch of Kodachrome, and see how that plays out. Because after a certain point of time, it's going to become, as a photographic medium, kind of worthless. So, yeah, let's keep an eye on that, because it's going to be a day-by-day, play-by-play kind of thing as far as how it goes. But, yeah, it's anyone's guess how much is left. The press release said that, in their estimation, based on current use, supply would last until early fall. Well, current use has changed. They made the announcement. Current use no longer applies. So we've got a whole different scheme of operation going on here, both the consumer mind and the distributorship. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, well, let's hope that they do have more, and maybe if there's a huge run, maybe they pump out another run worth of it. Who knows? They could do that. It only takes them a day or two to set up. We've seen it.
Yeah, they can't pull the wool over our eyes anymore. We know what's up down there in Building 38. So, yeah, you never know. You know, I felt going over there, it was like going to the Wizard, going to see the Wizard or the Wizard of Oz. Like, no one ever, rarely gets to see it, but here's your chance. And once the door closes, you ain't coming back. So, not that that would be the case at Kodak. I'm sure they'd welcome us back, but it's an industry over there, and it's an industrial operation. So it's not like the Busch Gardens in Tampa where you get to watch them make beer. They've got to shut the thing out away from you and get to work. So they could be like spring of next year they decide, man, let's kick out another master roll. I highly doubt it, though, because they're just trying to operate on a timeline. They're their company, and Dwayne's is a company, and they're trying to work with specific timelines. That way people just have something to work with. And you don't get some guy coming over there New Year's Eve in Kansas dropping off 20 rolls and saying, oh, I heard rumor you guys might extend the processing for 3 months, so that's why I waited this long. I think they don't want that to happen, and I think that's a fair way to look at it. So as far as another roll being coded, yeah, it might happen within this calendar year, but I think Kodak's going to definitely stick on to discontinuing it this year, and I don't think we're going to see Kodachrome processing after December 31st of 2010.
Right, as Dwayne starts dropping off, like you said, it's going to go away. So, nevertheless, back to our tour of 38, I think that was a very bright move on Kodak's part, because some of the people that were on the tour with us said are in very high places within Kodak, within distribution and marketing, had not been on the tour either. They've only had a select few people come through that building. So, I mean, it was a great time last week to be able to hang out with all these people and talk about what's going on and share our thoughts about the future of analog capture. And I think Kodak did this in a very stylish and an upfront way to let people know that they didn't just cancel it. As of today, we are no longer shipping it. Good luck. Bye-bye. Click. They didn't do it.
Right. They kind of went back to their roots in all of this. They felt more like a family-owned or a company that was born of a grassroots approach to something rather than just a company that's purely a numbers game. Yeah, I think bringing us out there the way they did and then spooling that all together with the people we were hanging out with, they need to do more of that. And I think that they recognize that too. So I applaud their move in that. And I really applaud them letting us have 18 months to shoot Kodachrome.
No, definitely. So let's talk about how people would find out about the Kodachrome project, what you guys have going, what the different things that are going over there. You have a forum. Tell me about the Kodachrome project.
Well, we got some cool things going on like we have been doing. But things are going to start developing as this situation has now changed into the timeline it has. There's about 350 or so people signed onto the forum. Yeah, I'd say there's over 100 people active, and there's quite a bit of people shooting the film worldwide. And I've got a couple guys in Japan that are just kicking out some awesome stuff. And then there's people here in stateside that are doing really well. There's a guy in Finland who's making films. He's still got some 8mm hanging out. So people are really getting into it. And then another fun thing is I picked up a couple of those stereo cameras called Stereo Realists, and they were actually born of Kodachrome. Kodachrome's existence caused the 3D craze to hit back in the 50s. So I'm going to shoot one of them, and I'm going to send the other one around the world in a Pelican case, and it's going to go from photographer to photographer, and they're all going to shoot stereo slides through it. Hopefully that'll be a fun exhibit part of the Kodachrome projects, what the product of it is. We'll end up with some great stereo images for people to look through at a gallery show. So that's pretty fun. Just trying to get people to go out and try different things with it if that's what they want to do. Ultimately, I want to see a really great book come from this that has both a series of essays and kind of a lightbox conglomeration of other people's images and mixed with the essays that I've done, and then have an exhibit that would be hung a couple times or shown in different places. And the website, kodachromeproject.com, it's pretty much the portal for all of that. In fact, I was just talking to my webmaster today. We're going to have a meeting on Thursday and try to add a WordPress blog on there and create some links to vendors who are going to be able to write us with different things for photography that would be relating to Kodachrome. Obviously, we know where to buy the film, and that's not going to last long, so there's no reason to put too much effort into that. But overall, the site is going to stay there for a long, long time. I would like to see it become a place for all things Kodachrome and represent more than just the pictures, more than just the technical stuff, but go into the history and some fun tidbits and whatnot. So you can go over there to the project site and you can sign on and check out the forums. Got some great historical links to the FSA-OWI photographers of the Great Depression era. And what they did with the very first rolls of Kodachrome are very uncanny to what we're going through economically now. So that's what I expect to see, is that continues as a portal of knowledge. A friend and I just discussed, maybe 6 months ago, maybe doing a workshop. We thought about doing it out there near Parsons, Kansas, because we could get pretty quick turnaround on the lab time. But we might entertain other areas, like have a workshop near Santa Fe or something, and teach people how to shoot great Kodachrome. That way, when they're going to go out and pursue their dream on Kodachrome, they've got a little bit more feedback, a little bit more insight as to how to expose it well and what kind of subjects to shoot with it. That's something we're talking about. We'll see if time permits, because time's not on our side entirely here. So that's what I'm trying to do with it. And obviously, there's funding issues, too. This is all out of my pocket thus far. I don't mind that, but at some point, yeah, it'd be nice to just have more funding. That way I could execute bigger ideas quicker, faster, well-backed. And I think this is the kind of project that deserves to be funded to some degree and underwritten. And I'm going to be looking for that in earnest here for the next few months. So I hope that answers your questions regarding it. And if you have any more, definitely fire away.
No, I think that's great. Now, let's talk about yourself. If you're a professional photographer, and you have been for quite a long time, so tell me about what you're doing these days, what you're shooting, how much of your professional work is analog. Tell me about what you're doing.
Well, I've been a photographer as a life for 34 of my 42 years, and I've been doing it professionally for probably close to 20 years. I've been based out of Aspen, Colorado for 11, and it's fantastic up here as far as photographers and culture and skiing and all that kind of stuff. So I shoot mostly commercial advertising and stock and the lifestyle and the needs of a mountain town like this. I also have an agent in New York, Polaris Images, and they represent my editorial work, which I try to do as much as I can, but we all know what that climate looks like right now. So as far as the split, film and digital, my high point on digital is probably right before I decided to start taking on the Kodachrome project. Digital finally got to the point to where I liked it. It was full frame. It was putting out decent files, and it was starting to look fantastic in low light. But that's when I started kind of shifting my paradigm a bit and realizing that I've been chasing this rainbow. At that time, it was probably a decade. Then it just dawned on me, I'm not done with film yet. So I try to incorporate as much as I can into it. If you take the Kodachrome project out of the equation, the split is probably about 65-35 in favor of digital. Add Kodachrome project in there, it's pushing digital down to maybe 30% of my work now, and the rest is on analog. I've got two other book projects going in black and white medium format. I'm building a darkroom that's going to allow me to shoot this film and print analog prints from it of up to 50 inches wide. So I'm really expanding my horizons as an artist and trying to do more things that are for me and not directly for a client or perceived market need. And I think that's one of the marks of true success in photography is not how much money you've made or how many awards you've made, but if you can make a choice to choose whatever medium you want and not have a market or a person dictate what you should be shooting. In other words, they're going to say, Dan knows what he's doing. If he wants to shoot film, he's going to do great. I have no doubt. All I want is the best image. So that's a great place to be. And finally, after all these years, it's a place I'm at. It's good. It's good to be a photographer. I've done a lot of amazing things in life that have nothing to do with photography because of photography. And I've been exposed to some really incredible things. I'm really grateful for that. So going back to the Kodachrome project, maybe that's my way of kind of giving back to that.
No, I think that's great, and it's good to see that you're using all tools available to do what you need to make money as a professional photographer, but still have a hold of your traditional analog roots, and you still love to shoot film. It's very cool.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a nice zen place. It makes you feel good.
So, Daniel, tell our listeners where they can find out about yourself, your photography, definitely the Kodachrome project, and everything else that's going on.
Well, Kodachrome project's where you're going to find me the easiest. I'm actually in the process right now of redoing my professional, commercial, and stock site. It's danbayerphoto.com. It hasn't been launched yet. If you remember that, you're going to go there in about a month, and you'll see it launched and see the other parts of my photography. Otherwise, yeah, it's easy to get a hold of me through the Kodachrome Project site. I'm pretty good about answering emails when I can, and I group them all together and get them done, and I'll take a phone call, and it's not that hard to get a hold of me. But, yeah, definitely you'll see a portfolio of mine on Polaris' site for editorial work. And I've got some work up on photo.net, and there you go.
Great stuff. I do appreciate you joining us today talking about the situation with Kodachrome, your guys' Kodachrome project, and it was just great chatting and, of course, hanging out with you guys last week, going through the Kodak stuff and all the things that are going on here. I really appreciate it, Daniel.
I appreciate it, too, and I thank you for the opportunity to kind of just brush upon the different attributes of what's going on lately. And, yeah, you were great to hang out with in Rochester there. I don't think we're going to soon forget that experience. It was pretty amazing. So, good stuff.
Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Well, there you go. Daniel Bayer and the Kodachrome Project. Hate to see it go. Our old friend is going to be leaving us very soon, so you have 18 months to get your film processed and probably 18 days to buy the rest of the stock that's around. You definitely got to check it out. You can find out all that information over at kodachromeproject.com. I've been your host, Scott Shepard, here on Inside Analog Photo, and the Inside Analog Photography Radio Show has been brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful at FujifilmUSA.com/professional. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab at RichardPhotoLab.com. DR5 with fabulous black and white chrome at DR5.com. Iger Studios for the finest, highest quality scans you can get at IgerStudios.com. Upstrap at Upstrap-Pro.com. And of course, our media partners of the Analog Photography User Group, the place on the web for all things analog photography. Definitely check them out over at www.apug.org. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.